This is the Medicast Live, recorded January 12th, 2010, but released here today, January 18th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Good day and welcome to this week's episode. As I said, it's recorded earlier this week in the Medicast Live segment on Tuesday, January 12th. And just a reminder, you can catch the Medicast Live every month on the second Tuesday of the month, 10 p.m. Eastern time at medicastlive.com. And next month on February 9th, 2010, the second Tuesday in February, we'll be talking about pediatric issues in EMS. So you won't want to miss that upcoming episode if you enjoy listening to these types of panel discussions, but yet you'd like to contribute either in the chat room or to call in live on the phone line, just like a radio show. You can do that next month, February 9th, 2010 at 10 p.m. Eastern time. And again, that's at medicastlive.com. So without too much further ado, here is that segment recorded earlier this week. This is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and you're listening to the Medicast Live. And we have got a great show here for our first Medicast Live of 2010. And as we do every year in that first episode, we're going to be talking about our predictions for EMS for 2010. What's coming up for the world of emergency medical services in the coming year? What's going to be new? What's going to be old and still hanging on by the skin of its teeth or whatever? It is a lot of things going on. We've had a lot of exciting things happening in the past year, one of which we'll probably touch on, I'm sure, when we talk with one of our panelists, because there's a lot going to be happening with that in the coming few weeks or in the next 4 to 6 weeks or so. We're going to have a lot of exciting things going on. But I wanted to make sure that all of you are really staying tuned to the coming year here in the Medicast and all of the great EMS podcasts that are out there, because we are going to have a lot of great things going on here on in EMS, and hopefully your favorite EMS podcast and blog will be covering what's going on, and you'll be able to participate in that conversation through them, or maybe we'll help you start your own show or blog, because that's one of my favorite things to do, is to help somebody get started in blogging and podcasting. I want to remind you that you can find show notes for this and every other episode over at medicast.com in the Medicast blog, and you'll find everything over there. I want to also remind you that if you have any questions or comments when you're on this live show, certainly include them in the chat room or call in live on our live call-in line during the show. 724-444-7444 is your phone line, and then enter the call ID 18174 and the pound sign when you're prompted. This will get you signed in, and you can go ahead and get on the call, and when you call in, I bring you right on up. I see Dr. Anonymous is in the chat room again. Boy, I tell you what, two Medicast Lives in a row, we've had the amazing and infamous Dr. Anonymous in the chat room. If you haven't listened to Dr. A's show, you should definitely check out the Dr. Anonymous show. You can find links to his show over at, I think, dranonymous.com, and also at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com. So you definitely want to check that out, as well as all the other great EMS podcasts there. And without further ado, let's jump on in and introduce our panel of guests. And I'm just going to go right down the list here. We've got quite an esteemed panel in no particular order, but we'll start off with Greg Fries from EPS411.com, Everyday EMS Tips. I think EMS Kitchen Sink is your next site, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking of EMSTrailerPark.com.
Well, since we get sent to trailer parks, at least in my area, it seems like we get sent to trailer parks quite a bit. That might help.
Oh, yeah. Yep. One of the trends or goals I have for 2010 is to try to I'm sort of all over the place web-wise, and I need to focus. I need an umbrella. and then to put things under that. So, but yeah, thanks so much, Jamie, for having me. Great to chat with you again. And I'm in the chat room as well, G Freeze. So let's say hi. Thanks.
Great. And we also have from the EMS Garage podcast and also helping out with the EMS Educast and EMS Leadership podcast, Mr. Chris Montero. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I always feel very lucky to be on your podcast because you are the, everybody calls me the master of EMS media, but really it's you, dude, because you're the one that started it, and you're the one that went, Jamie's got something cool. So, you know, we take the best of what we learn, and you were part of that. So, thank you for having me on. I always love being on, and, well, and I don't have to be producing, which is even better.
Yeah. It's always, I'll tell you what, that's one of the things I love about when I'm invited to come on the EMS Garage, because it's like, all I have to do is sit there and talk. I don't have to write anything or type anything or do anything like that. So it's awesome, but it's great to have you. And, you know, whether you're the master, I'm the master, whoever it is just, you know, part of the great EMS community here in podcasting and blogging. And it's just a pleasure to be a part of it any way we slice it. And I guess as we move right along, speaking of EMS media, you know, you can't talk about in these days EMS media without talking about the amazing project going on at chroniclesofems.com. If you haven't checked it out, it is just, I'm just proud to be like kind of on the outside looking in and being kind of associated enough that I can have Mr. Ted Setla, director of and founder of the EMS video project, the video pilot of Chronicles of EMS. Ted, welcome to the show.
Wow. I'm humbled. Let me back up a bit because I don't know if I deserve all that, but it has been an unbelievable roller coaster over these last few weeks to even think that this started with just a few days' notice. So thank you for having me. I'm looking so forward to the next few weeks. And boy, we got a big event planned coming up here.
Well, we'll talk more about that later. And I know that we're going to be talking about media and EMS over the coming year. And I will definitely be picking your brain on that topic as we get into that in the show later on.
Sounds good.
And you know what? I am so excited for our next guest. Rick Rosati has been a staple here on the Medicast Live for so long, and he started nursing school this past year and has been so busy between that and having a new baby in the house and everything else that he gets his fingers in, that he has not been available on nights that we have the Medicast Live. I mean, he teaches paramedic classes, and he's just, I don't know how you have time to do the things you do, Rick, but I am so excited to have Rick Rosati from the Mitigation Journal podcast here on the show tonight.
Hey, Jamie, thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here and to hear your viewpoints. And so we're looking forward to hearing a bit of the all hazards approach to what's coming up in EMS in 2010.
You got it. Be glad to participate.
And last, certainly not least, and the rose among the thorns, Carissa O'Brien, who is just a fabulous part of the EMS social community on Twitter and via her blog. And you know what? I forgot to write it down, and I'm drawing a complete blank. So, Carissa, you have to plug your blog when you start talking, because I had it written here, and I don't have the paper in front of me. But, Carissa, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Happy to be here. I'm fighting a migraine, but nothing was going to keep me away from Medicast tonight. So thanks for having me, as always, Jamie, and looking forward to talking about the future. It is Carissa O on Twitter, Redbox Communications, and the blog is baselinevitals.com.
Baseline Vitals. Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry, Carissa. I'm such a doof. But
quite all right.
baselinevitals.com, a great blog and a great read. And of course, if you become a friend of Carissa, follow her over on Twitter, Carissa O, and she has great information coming out through all of her contacts all the time on Twitter. And it's a great way to keep up with what's going on. So we've introduced our panel. We have everybody in the chat room, and I'll tell you, it is so important for all of us to think about what's coming up in the coming year in EMS, because there are so many things that are right on the cusp of happening. So many things I think we've been waiting for a long time. And I will kind of open things up. I think I'm going to start off with Rick, because it's been a long time since you've been on the show. And what's one of the number one things? I mean, I think we're going to be talking about the economy, at least in part, tonight. And a lot of you mentioned things having to do with the economy and EMS. And you had mentioned some things to me when you threw out some of your predictions. What did you think about budget declines and dealing with that in the coming year?
Well, Jamie, I think that's going to be the huge issue. And not just for municipal services, but I think for private commercial services, they're going to feel that as well. I think we're going to see some shortfalls in tax revenue and an increased pressure. And here's the key, I think, for everybody: increased pressure to justify what you're doing, whether it's fire service providing emergency medical service, justify that you need to be doing that when there's commercial or private or other concerns that'll do that for you. Justify or cut your personnel, justify your facilities, your equipment. And I think this is really going to fall back to the public tax base being impacted by the economy and unfunded mandates, as we've seen before. And I think this is really going to push emergency services, both municipal services and private services, to really scrutinize what they're doing and to refocus their mission on what their role in emergency service is. I guess that'd be my number one point there.
And I think a couple other people brought that up, because Greg, you also had mentioned something about resource management and how that was going to be affected by economic concerns.
Yeah, Jamie, I think, just there's going to either be, because of the economic concerns, but also at some point common sense might prevail, and just this thought of not all routine medical calls need an ambulance plus a fire engine with 3 to 5 or 6 people on it plus a police officer, that just because there's going to be potentially in a lot of service areas less units available for calls because of staff reductions or brownouts or, not replacing people as they retire. But then also, and we're already seeing this in all the chatter coming out of Cleveland in the last 2 days of the Cleveland EMS saying that they're, not going to be sending ambulances under certain conditions to what they dispatch as minor medical calls. And, to some degree that's economics driven, but I also think there might be some common sense driving that as well. But what we're also seeing in Cleveland is that's a great opportunity to package a lot of fear about worst case scenarios and what ifs. And, you can count on us to do our job right, but everybody else in the system is a dope. So we can't rely on all those other dopes to get this right. So it will be interesting to see, but I'm with Rick on that. The economics are going to have a big impact here.
I'm wondering if it's going to be something that, I think we're going to see a lot of communities try to make do with fewer units on the street. But I know that, Chris, you talked recently on your show about some new resource management things that were going on out in the EMS community and some even software that people were touting as the solution to resource management. Is that something that you think is really going to be a fix, or is better resource management going to save that much money?
Can I say no? I don't see how I want to say hey to Mick Gunderson. I saw him in the room there. So, hey, I don't see how this is any different than SSM. The software that they purchased in Florida recently cost $500,000. I'm wondering how long it takes until you could see the cost savings from that. Other people said it probably wouldn't take very long, but I'm of the opinion that it will take a year or two to recognize the savings, maybe even the break-even point of that $500,000. And I'm not a big fan of SSM, but I know that it's a big economic factor in a lot of services, and that's how you can really utilize your units to their fullest potential. And so I don't know. I don't know what the future of that is, but I sure hope not. I hope that there's some kind of in-between balance of, you know, making sure that the calls are answered appropriately and timely, but yet using something like medical priority dispatch to send the right unit at the right time, kind of like what Greg was saying.
Yeah, it's something that I've seen a lot of areas. I know I was talking to my local director of emergency services just a week or so ago, and they said they were looking at an 8% reduction in their operating budget for the coming fiscal year. And this was after they had a 5% reduction last year. And he said, you know, when you look at that, the 13% in an operating budget for an emergency services department is huge. And how can they continue to provide coverage for the county? And I know that there are a lot of other places, it seems like, that are dealing with that. It seems like we saw a lot of people in the private sector taking hits from their jobs, but it hadn't really spread into the public sector, at least in the public safety areas, until this year. Now we've started to see a lot of places cutting back and reducing travel allowances for conferences, and I think it's gonna have a major effect for several years to come.
Well, Jamie, if I can jump in on that for a minute, you know, the EMS providers and EMS agencies have been sorely cut out of preparedness dollars since September 11th, 2001. I don't think you can name too many EMS agencies that are not associated with law enforcement or the fire service that have gotten their fair share, if I can say that, of preparedness dollars. And what we've seen, and, you know, this is my favorite rant, actually, is what we've seen is, you know, especially fire departments may not have spent those preparedness dollars wisely in terms of, you know, deployment or personnel or training. And you know, they're kind of riding the downside of that wave now of dollars. And EMS, who never got that money to begin with to beef up in the last decade or so, is now finding themselves under the same scrutiny to do more with less, or to have healthcare reimbursement dry up. And we're going to be expecting the same level of service and probably more, you know, going into my next prediction of working with community health, but, you know, having the same expectations without the same amount of funding for emergency medical service coming from our public, that's going to assume that EMS has been part of that pie. And I think we can all agree, and, you know, feel free to disagree with me, that EMS hasn't been on the receiving end of that that financial bailout, if you will, since September 11th.
Oh, I don't think anybody will disagree with you. I think that largely EMS was overlooked in favor of fire and police services because of just the focus was so much on that large-scale disaster response, and it was focused on structural damage. It wasn't focused so much on people damage, unless it was the damage that might be caused to a responder. And I think that left EMS out in the cold. We were really not included in that in any way, shape, or form. But you bring up a good point about public health as you talk about another prediction, because I think that public health integration with EMS was probably one of the success stories to come out of 2009 in the wake of the H1N1, swine flu, pig flu, whatever you want to call it. And it was something that I think we actually were very successful at, something that a lot of us have been talking about for a long time, of closer integration with other services in the community. And it took this particular event to cause us to do that. But many of us have seen some closer talking with our local health departments. Some of us have been added to the roles of approved vaccinators, if you will. And I think that this has been, you know, for EMS, a big kudo and a big plus for 2009. And I hope that it will continue into 2010.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. You know, EMS, as I've been saying for a few years now, I think the best thing you could do for EMS in across the country, and I'll open myself up to comment, is take the E off of EMS. And we focus so much on emergency response, but I think, as you just mentioned, the value of pre-hospital care or EMS working with public health has really little to do with emergency response. It's more community health-based.
medicine, you know, looking out to take care of, you know, homeless populations or at-risk populations, or being a resource to be used in a public health crisis. And unfortunately, in, as you mentioned earlier, and I know here in New York, it took an act of the governor to allow paramedics to give injections for flu vaccine, which just seems absurd when you've got flu clinics with mass gatherings and you could be moving those people quickly. Something as simple as giving an injection took an act of the state government. And I think that is going to be the lasting effect, just like you mentioned, coming out of 2009 and forward in 2010, is recognizing that EMS providers are uniquely qualified to go into the community and to do some of these things in areas and with patient populations or customer populations that may not otherwise be served.
Anybody else?
You know, I always want to chime in on this one.
I figured.
Yeah, well, and I think that the role for how we integrate with community health is more than just in an emergency or in that one time. I really think that it's about the everyday mitigation of disease and chronic issues in our community. And the only real way to do that is to partner with public health and primary care physicians. No big surprise, community paramedics really where I think that should go. Unfortunately, I know that there are a lot of paramedics that went, I didn't sign up for that, and I'm not really going to go into somebody's home and figure out what's going on with them. But you know what? I will tell you, I think it'll increase our role as providers, and it will really change the way we are looked upon by our peers in other form, in other factors in the medical field. So I just think that I don't think that that's necessary. I don't think this is our year for that, but I think 3 years from now, we'll be looking at a lot of community paramedic programs coming online.
Yeah. Dr. Anonymous was giving a shout out to primary care docs, but I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to, I think this could be a step in the direction of doing some of the things that we are best equipped to do. We see people more often in their natural environment than anyone else. You know, we see them in their home, in their community, on the street, and we see what their lifestyle and their life is really like more often than anyone else does. And we are in a unique position to provide preventative maintenance for these people. And not necessarily do we actually provide the care, but we can be that voice that says, well, wow, you know, I'm integrated now with the local health department, and I have a contact that I can use at social services, and I can refer this person to this community service that may prevent them from calling me every 2 days like they have been for the last month, and help someone that's got a problem get a solution to that problem that isn't involving calling 911.
One thing in this, and kind of it's more of a shout out too, but here in Alameda County, we had change in management over this last year, and there's an individual named Mike Tagman that has taken on that specific role better than anybody. And I'm just hearing you guys talk about this, and I'm just amazed at the leadership that he brings to the table, because that's one of the things he's been really a proponent of over this last year, is teaming up with organizations like the Ethnic Health Institute in Oakland, whose their big focus is community education and awareness. And they're doing things by, you know, as simple as all the educational and bilingual packets of information on stroke, heart attack, and all of that, putting that in the ambulances so that we can hand these out in the streets. I mean, something as simple as that is something that it's, we're there helping these people get this information, and when are they ever going to go to these blood pressure clinics or whatever else that the Ethnic Health Institute would, you know, be at? They're not going to reach the entire population. So the fact that he's teaming up with them to provide this information for the general public it's been a huge ambitious goal, but I think it's probably more effective than much of the emergency stuff that we're doing.
Yeah, Mick Gunderson points out in the chat room, you know, EMS providers in many parts of the world are not really intended to automatically transport the way we do in so much of the United States. You know, I was told in a very early time, you know, if a patient asks your opinion on whether they should go to the hospital or not, the answer is always yes, because you can't provide an informed medical opinion the way a doctor can. And so you must take them to the hospital to where a doctor can tell them that they were crazy to come into the hospital. And, you know, it's been a tightrope walk for me ever since, because I can't in good faith, you know, tell a family that can't afford, you know, to pay their bills and put food in the kitchen that they're going to have to go to the local ER where they're going to add yet another call from a collection service to their, you know, list of don't pick up the phone kids, because they've got to have somebody else give them the opinion that this cough can wait until an urgent care center in the morning.
What are some other trends, Jamie, that we've got looking forward to?
Well, let's look into that. I think one of the other things that were brought up by you guys as you checked in with me, use of targeted media and the EMS industry. And I'm curious, Ted, you brought that one up, and I'm curious what you mean by targeted media in the EMS industry. Do you mean for training? Do you mean for education about services to the public? What specifically do you mean by that?
Well, I think that if you have a really good stream of content that you know what your audience is, and whether it is the audience, say, the patient audience or the EMS provider, many of the targeted things I was talking about is creating content. For instance, there's been several studies that this has actually gone on where they've created PSAs and have played them in theaters in a certain generic area. So let's just call it Alameda County. And you teach what the signs and symptoms are in a 30-second PSA of a stroke. And you see about how the time to hospital either increases or decreases. Obviously, the goal is to decrease based on, you know, patient perception or family perception of what the signs and symptoms are. So when you start thinking about exactly what your population is, creating content that is not only racially and economically and socioeconomically relevant for that population, and seeing exactly how well the response is and how they pick up the message. That's one part of it. And the other side is education. And I'm probably the biggest proponent on adding the element of entertainment in education. And when you target that in a way to the EMS population that allows them to have that little bit of entertainment during their classes and whatnot, I think there's a much better way of being able to provide that from not only just video, but from other standpoints as well. And I think that there, if this is produced right, I think you will get a much bigger retention on a lot of the classes that you'll be teaching. So.
And I guess that would include community outreach and things like that as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, depending on everything from, you know, and entertainment has to be a part of that element as well. You get as a matter of fact, I'm working on a video right now that is a translation piece for educating the population in downtown Oakland about the signs and symptoms of stroke. And I'm translating it from English to Cantonese. So there's a perfect example of getting some targeted content that's actually going to be used in a population that is truly at a higher risk.
Carissa, we've had haven't had much to chat with you about, but this really falls, I think, into your backyard as far as understanding, you know, the broader aspects of media and outreach to a community. Do you see this catching on in other areas of the country and spreading through the EMS community, where we can reach out not only to our providers and our employees, but also to our communities to help educate about things we do, about treatments and when to call?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only across the country, but globally. You know, we're seeing a lot more sharing across the borders of best practices and just really a building of community in order to, you know, understand each other's systems. I mean, well, not to go back to Chronicles of EMS, but that's a perfect example. I mean, that was born out of you know, two passionate medics that love their work, but were, you know, seeking more answers and you know, and more experiences of their fellow medics. And, you know, we know the great story that's come out of that, but that's one slice of what's going on. You know, we're seeing a lot more sharing and community building. And, you know, social media, I think, is one thing that is certainly creating some of that change. But, you know, the mainstream media is having a role in that, too. You know, folks are still turning to their traditional media sources, but expecting a much more personalized experience, you know, where maybe the EMS trade journals and the scientific journals, you know, didn't need to provide that level of personalization before. That's changing. And I think social media is a part of what's changing it. But yeah, it's media is definitely going to play a big role, and I think an evolving role, though, in the coming year.
You know, and it occurs to me that media could help with the resource management end of things, too. I know, Chris, earlier in the year on the EMS Garage, you had a discussion about CPR success with, I can't remember the doctor's name, from Washington State, talking about programs that he had put in effect, community outreach, public service announcements on TV, teaching the basics of CPR right off of a website or off of a TV commercial to encourage and improve community CPR response.
Well, true. And we did talk about that. And I think that might have been the Educast, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but, Jamie, maybe you're talking about Dr. Eisenberg?
I think so. Yeah, is that the Educast?
Was the Educast, okay. And that was mainly Greg. So you might want to talk to him about that. But I did want to weigh in on something really quick. I know we're all podcast. I love what they're saying in the thing. We're podcast addicts, and I might be one of the biggest ones because I keep going, yeah, I'm going to buy that domain and make another podcast like that. So who knows? What you guys were all talking about too. I think, you know, it's got to be the year of education. And one of the things about EMS and what we do is we've got to make sure that we're educating the public, and things that these guys are doing is really part of that. So I think this circles back around to, how do we educate the public about what we do? We do it with community CPR programs, and we do it with ways to do that. But that starts in school with the EMTs and paramedics. So now I'll be quiet and let Greg talk.
I'd be happy to talk. Is there something, you know, here's the thing I was just thinking about was, you know, we were talking about system status management, or I call it voodoo dispatch, or just drive around and miss calls.
What, do you have like a little ambulance and you stick pins in it or something?
Right, yeah. Send them to this gas station that has dirty bathrooms. Now go post where the Wi-Fi doesn't work. You know, now go post where the only way to park is so the sun's right in your face.
Sounds like a dream job.
Yeah. Yep.
Are you speaking from experience, Greg?
No. So you know, excuse me. One of the things that's really happening with social media and is clearly going to be a trend in 2010 is the geolocation piece of, to be able to know where people are updating their status from, and being able to target specifically. And, you know, I think Rick was mentioning disasters, and being able to fine tune like who's affected and in the sort of area of the disaster versus who's just talking about it. And then, you know, from the people inside, how can they give us updates that are useful and meaningful and actionable, and then how can we communicate back to them? That's something I kind of have my eye on in this year as well.
Well, and you're right. You know, social media, I think the people that could benefit most from the use of social media are our community disaster response organizations, because if they can educate their community, and we don't have that, you know what, we don't have that TV station that everybody tunes to anymore. People aren't, you know, people are not tuned to local TV and radio the way that they were when the original emergency response system was put in place. But people do have their phones and they are following Twitter and Facebook and all of these other things. And if you can become a fan of your community's disaster response network on Facebook, or you can follow your community's disaster response network on Twitter, then when there is something going on, you can get updates that are credible and reliable because they come from your community's disaster resource.
Exactly. And it's just another tool in the sort of toolbox of getting the message and information out to people.
Another topic that was brought up as we continue to move through the predictions here, and again, if anyone sees a prediction go by in the chat room that we haven't talked about, please bring it up, because I can't always catch everything. It's going by so quickly. But one of the predictions that really caught my eye from Ted was more new e-preneurs, entrepreneurs from the EMS sector. And I'm curious what you meant about that, Ted. Did you mean people getting out of the EMS business into something different, or did you mean kind of creating something new for use by people and their colleagues in EMS?
Well, I can't even begin to tell you the amount of emails, text, tweets, Facebooks, what else? Google groups. How many messages I've gotten from people that have said that they have started to work on other projects that involve EMS to some degree and to really chase a dream of theirs. And I can't. I mean, for me, that's an inspiration all in its own, because they mention and they leave they mention Chronicles of EMS as being one of their inspirations in that whole thing. So that's kind of what, I mean, from my perspective, I think that there's a lot of people seeing that, you know, you don't need, obviously, to have that $30,000 camera. You don't need that $10,000 machine at home to do all the things we're doing. It really just takes the initiative of people finding out what resources are available online and how to ease the system of communication depending on how big of a project you really have, but pulling together as many people. I don't think that there's a right solution for any one thing, and that's kind of where we're in this growing stage from a social media perspective. We don't know exactly what the solution is or the platform best to use in any one situation, and not knowing that puts us all in an advantage that we can experiment all we want and come up with something that really fits our individual needs for that business model. And so I'm thankful that we're all in this, and I think we each have our own individual look and feel and back engine support and ties with this widget or that, you know, code or whatnot. But the cool thing is that they're all doing very similar things to some degree, and they're all integrating some of the major social networks and allowing us all to communicate in ways that, you know, I think that business model then becomes something very different for each and every person creating their own way through the EMS field. So did I answer that?
I think you did. I think you did. And I know we saw quite a few great EMS entrepreneurs down at the EMS Expo. Carissa, you were able to go around and see lots of things. We had some close to us right by the booth. We saw quite a bit about, and we had a lot of really neat new gadgets and products we saw, and hopefully that will continue and we'll see even more as we go to conferences in the coming year. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was encouraged to see that, innovation has not taken a backseat in EMS. You know, we continue to see some great products, some ingenious solutions to challenges that we've seen in the field for years, some of which are the, you know, why didn't we think of that before now type of products, and some are just brilliant pieces of technology that are evolving. That's one thing I think we can definitely put high on the list of predictions for 2010 and beyond, that we're going to continue to see some innovative new products that we're all going to want to get our hands on and test out.
I think that's a good reminder, Jamie, that when we're talking about, I call them EMSpreneurs, that we're not just talking about multimedia or social media, but we're talking about field providers that see a problem, and whether it's fire, EMS, law enforcement, they see something that could be done better, and they just start to tinker. And you know, you've got the friend that does the oxygen wrench. Last year, I found this thing called Buckle Guard, which there's going to be a post up at my blog pretty soon, and then Life Tabs. And then there's some great authors, field personnel. They're like, wow, I've done some cool things in my life, and they just sit down and write a book about it. And all those are opportunities for EMSpreneurs.
I just want to go on record and say that sounds like something that I put on my garden in the spring. EMSpreneur.
Well, I'm sorry, as a manager, Chris,
don't you guys have septic tanks in Colorado?
No. I put it on. It's
EPreneur.
Right. It's still.
Here we are. Let's mark it 10:47 p.m. Eastern Time. We finally got to the potty jokes.
Sweet.
As both the lone girl here and the branding gal, I'm gonna pretty much squash that term and come up with a new one.
All right, well, that's what we're gonna have to do. Let's come up with something other than epreneur.
Oh, I was going to say, you could call this podcast our annual poo-dictions or something like that.
My license plate, that's how I came up with it, because my license plate is epreneur.
Oh, you're just too cool. Just too cool. Well, it does bring up something that I had thought about, and it was something that other people brought up in the predictions that they put forth. I think you talked about it as well, Rick, was looking at increased numbers of walk-in care centers. We've seen more and more of these urgent care centers in our communities. We've seen clinics opening in places like Targets and Walmarts and Walgreens stores around the country as opportunities to provide primary care. And I know Dr. A, as a primary care physician, there are so many people without primary access to easy and inexpensive primary care for minor problems that it's sometimes an issue. But I expect that we're going to see more of that. And I know that in the Maryland Protocol, starting last year in 2009, we were authorized to take priority 3 patients to an urgent care center rather than to the hospital, and not, we didn't have to actually take them directly there. We could just take them to an urgent call center and help them get into the call center and checked in. We haven't actually ever done that in my community. We have one urgent call center that is just across the state line in Delaware, but it's not something that we utilize a whole lot. And I don't know how many people do. Is this something you all see that might be happening more frequently?
Well, I don't see it here in Rochester yet, although I wish that's Rochester, New York. I wish we would. I think that's going to be a big impact on EMS call volume, that may actually be a really good thing. I don't know yet. But I do think that the walk-in care, urgent care, and the retail healthcare centers are here, and they're here to stay, and they're going to shape the way I think we do business in times to come. I just don't know exactly what shape that's going to take.
Anybody else? Urgent care? And Chris, I was wondering, because, I mean, we have so many different parts of the country. I mean, we've got Rick in Rochester, Ted, you're in Oakland and Alameda County. Chris, you're in Colorado, and Carissa, you're in Boston. So we've got a lot of the country covered here. Ted, are you there? Let's see if do you have anything going on with urgent care centers or using access to those types of clinics or urgent care centers in your community?
I just know that me as a paramedic, I learned that there were several urgent care centers recently that during the time in which I'm responding to people, I think I went to like one or two urgent care centers, find out that they actually were there. And I think that would help if that education was a mainstay in, say, handouts or things that we could give to know that these are a location that we could actually hand off to people at certain points. Maybe we still take them to the ER, but hey, by the way, did you know that this urgent care was around the corner from your house? I mean, I can see a solution like that being very probable, as you know, and it may not work on that visit, but it could help maybe future visits. So,
yeah, we here in Vail or near Vail, we have a, we're about 30 miles from a hospital. We have an urgent care facility opening in about 2 weeks here, and I'll let you know. I go back and forth. I really, and I may be kind of a romantic on this, but I really think you have to have a relationship with a physician to really overcome some chronic health issues and make sure that you have true health care and that they can follow anything that's going on with you, new things, and look for trends. However, urgent care has its place. The 2 a.m. sick kid, the occasional I can't find somebody on the weekend when I break my arm, things like that. So I don't know. I guess my thought is that I would hope that we would see more physicians enter primary care and enter that and enter family practice. But that's not where the money is. And less than 2% of the graduates are going there now. That's where I would love to see the trend go. Unfortunately, like I said, it's not going there. So urgent care is probably coming. It'll be like that trend we saw of other things, you know, helicopter services and everything like that. They're gonna flood the market, and then they're gonna cut way back. And I even saw Walgreens now has what they call them, or CVS, one of those pharmacies, has a minute walk in clinic. And you know, I still believe that, and people should have a physician. So.
Yeah, and I, you know, the problem is that if we have them added to our list of destinations, it may help with hospital overcrowding, but it doesn't help us at all with the ambulance overuse by certain members of the community, and certainly somebody that should be going to an urgent care center or some other walk-in clinic is probably a candidate for a taxi rather than an ambulance.
Well, doesn't that kind of get back to where we started this? Is, you know, some communities, because of financial problems, are going to be forced into making that choice of, you know, let's choose a more appropriate level of response, and then let's also examine how we transport people, if at all.
It all comes back to resource management again, and where we're going to find ourselves in 2010. I think everybody checked in one regard or another about EMS salaries, and I think we're all agreed EMS salaries aren't going up and aren't getting any better, and we're likely to lose more providers to other job avenues in 2010. Does everyone agree with that one?
Yeah, I do. I think... as much as we can sort of wring our hands or shout to the skies, you know, pay's not getting better, what it is either your hourly wage stays the same or it increases a small amount, but the amount you're paying towards your health insurance is always going to go up faster. And, you know, pay, it's just an odd issue that... I've been really ruminating on this topic because Chris Kaiser's been writing about it a lot on his blog, and I've kind of got a response put together in my head of sort of my thoughts on why pay is not very good and why that's not changing, and then what you should do about it if your motivation is to make more money. So more to come on that, I think.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I made the comment in the chat room and Carissa, you know, brought up as well about, you know, new reason for new EMS entrepreneurism is that, you know, the EMS pay alone isn't cutting it. And I brought up the point that in my community, I saw an ad recently, you can make more driving a garbage truck, which is a 5 day a week job. You get up early and you handle crap, but you're hauling garbage and you make more money hauling garbage than you do hauling people. And it's pretty sad.
I agree, well, and Mick said something even in the. Sorry, Rick. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, buddy. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say is Mick said something in the chat here that we need to de-incentivize the idea of getting paid for transport and really being smarter with our decisions. And until we get to that model in EMS where we can get different reimbursement for it, we're gonna have a harder time increasing the salary for EMTs and paramedics. And the other piece of that, again, I go back to education. The more education we have, the more educational requirements we have, the more of a quote unquote profession we'll be seen as.
I agree with that, Chris, but I'm not seeing the education translate into pay increases either. And I think, you know, I think your point is that that will evolve over time as well, and that we need to continue to put a focus on education so that we can sort of change the reputation of the field and to continue to elevate it. But I wish that I really wish that some of these pay scales would start to catch up with some of the evolution that the field has already made in having that commitment pay off. I mean, the pay scales are just so far off. And another thing that I've noticed too is that unlike a lot of other industries, it seems, you know, taking a look at salaries across, at least in the US, across the country, whereas a lot of other industries, there's much more, you know, there's much more variation based on the cost of living in various cities. It seems to be there's a lot less variation in EMS, that it's pretty much universally too low. And it just seems a little odd to me. And it's generally not keeping up with the trend in increase in education.
You know, but I think the related point is that, you know, we talk about, well, if we can advance education and professionalism in EMS, then the pay will increase. Well, in a lot of areas, nurses aren't paid anymore if they have a bachelor's degree versus an associate's degree. So, you know, while we hold that up as like a possibility, you know, there's just another example of, you know, when you're an hourly wage employee, that the wages, you know, it's a big supply and demand thing. And, you know, and just how many people stay in, and is, you know, it's sort of like, well, if people churn out of the profession, partly because of pay, but also partly because of injuries or poor management or whatever, you know, and then there's programs feeding new people into the pipeline all the time. You know, what's the incentive to raise the wages? It's a tough situation.
It is, but I think that, go ahead. Who is that? Rick? Go ahead.
Yep. Greg, I just maybe throw this out for your opinion and anybody else. Do you think that part of the problem might be the use of EMS jobs as a stepping stone to you know, race off to the fire truck or some such thing? If I can use that analogy, and maybe that the EMS provider, the skilled paramedic working within a fire service or some other municipality, is really not valued the way he or she should be. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's, yeah, a piece of it, and probably that is something that might be pretty geographic, depending on how EMS is delivered in a certain area, and then what the hiring requirements are of those fire departments. And so, yeah, I think that certainly a lot of people use working for a private, and I think we've had podcasts where, you know, Jamie and I have talked about that, of like a great way to get experience is to go work for a private system. And there are benefits of doing those, you know, frequent geriatric transfers all day long. And, you know, I think that is something that might be regional, of like, you know, and depending on how EMS is delivered in a certain area.
And I think that's very true. And we've discussed that. You're right, Greg. We've discussed that on our show, on my show. We discussed it, I think, on the Educast. We've discussed it working on some of the thing. I think we brought that up also on the EMS boot camp episode we did together. So I think it's just something that we need to continue to think about is that, you know, there are avenues to go and get involved with in EMS to advance your career after you've gotten started on the street as a street provider. And I know a lot of medics that have found other avenues for their training in the private sector that aren't traditional ambulance service. And maybe we're going to see more of that, an expansion of that role in for advanced providers at the very least. You know, it is 11 o'clock and the show runs for about an hour and we need to wind things down. And there is one thing I want to talk about, because one of the most exciting things going on coming up in 2010 is a project most of the panel is involved with, at least in one way or another. And that is the Chronicles of EMS project, and talking about understanding how EMS works in different places and different ways. Certainly that project is has a great opportunity to share that viewpoint and that outlook. And Ted, we got the pilot episode where Mark Glencourse came over from the UK, a paramedic from the UK, traveled to San Francisco, rode along with a San Francisco Fire Department paramedic, Justin Shore, and then Justin got an opportunity to go back and ride with Mark in the UK, and just the amazing insights both of them got about two very different EMS systems. And the first segment of that, the pilot episode with the San Francisco leg, is almost ready for viewing, I understand. Is that correct?
That is correct. We, as a matter of fact, tomorrow morning I'm meeting with the editor to go over much of the rough cut that we have so far. I know that I was working on myself the first 2.5 minutes of the episode, and she's working on the rest of it during this time, because there was a few things I really wanted to integrate into the action suspense scenes, if you will, but to draw people in the very beginning. So, this has been a project that I'm fortunate to have fallen into it, but I think, you know, the concept really started, you know, when Chris Montero and I, and we were all over there at EMS Expo, and I can't believe how amazing the turn of events happened, where we were sitting in that room talking about, you know, he had just gotten back from Australia, wasn't it, Chris? Something like that. And
New Zealand.
Yeah, somewhere out there. And we were just somewhere. Talking about how cool would it be to visit all these EMS systems and share that. And literally, not even a week later, this dumped into our lap, and we started saying, oh, my goodness, is this really, you know, really happening? So, you know, unique for us that, you know, we embrace social media as well as we do. We're learning quite a bit on how to pull this community together in a lot of different ways. I'm excited to be exploring this. The unfortunate thing is the pay is not great right now, so it's a struggle to try and make sure that we get – is through these hurdles until we get some investors. So this is going to be a big premiere that we're having on the 12th, because we've got several guests coming in to host the event that are celebrities in their own right. And we also have several venture capital people who are actually going to be showing up as well. So this is going to be a pretty big event, and we're hoping to now take this to to the season. And make, you know, 15, 20 of these a year.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. And I know that a lot of us are, you know, listening and spreading the word and doing our part. And of course, everybody out there can find out more at chroniclesofems.com. You can actually watch the trailer over there. And I'm so looking forward to the upcoming release of the pilot episode. And I'm hoping that this catches on and we're able to go out and see different services around the United States, around North America, around the world, and really get a sense of how first of all, how different things are. But I think what we're going to find also is that, you know, despite those differences, our EMS providers on the street are just people that are very, very much alike, that want to help their community, that like being out there on the street, on the front lines, enjoy the unexpected nature of things. And I'm hoping that we are able to see how much we're alike as well.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, just as a quick a location for people to go. We have it on Chronicles of EMS. There's a place that says RSVP. If you're going to be in the area or flying in or whatnot, do us a quick favor and just RSVP. It's a meetup.com site that we've got set up that allows us to track this. So when we get ready to get the final count and we can remember, you know, get the final cost of what this is going to be, just want to make sure people can go through that and, you know, let us know exactly what we're looking at to tell the location.
Very, very cool. So, Ted, I'll let you finish up with your, you know, your contact info and where we can find more of what you're working on out there.
Okay. Well, again, my name's Thaddeus Ted Setla, for those who've seen Thaddeus all over the place. My website is setlafilms.com, and the new media group that we are putting together to encompass not only web TV, audio and video podcasting, as well as blogging, is emsmedia.tv. I can be found on Facebook at /Setla, @Setla on Twitter. And for those who actually still use a phone, 510-859-FILM.
Very cool. Very cool.
510-895-FILM.
Film.
Call for all your film things.
Film, film, film.
Film.
Even though it's video, but film, film. Crazy. All right. No, it's all right. We need to get that guy who does the movie announcements, you know, Saturday. No. Okay. Anyway, let's continue on with our folks here. Carissa, where can we find more of you?
Find me on Twitter at Carissa O. You can also find me at redboxcommunications.com or at baselinevitals.com.
Awesome. And thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Happy to. Thank you again.
Rick Rosati of the Mitigation Journal, where can we find more about what's going on with you?
Well, you can check out my pretty lame little website at mitigationjournal.com. It's got links to the podcast and blog and nothing like the quality you guys got on your sites. I'm still a rank amateur, just trying to jam fire service, EMS, disaster management, and public health into one podcast. So, there you have it.
Excellent. Well, and I will urge everybody, check out Rick's excellent podcast talking about hazardous, not just hazardous materials and disaster response, but all aspects of preparedness, even preparing for your next shift. And I think that Rick does a great job of continuing education information and just keeping us all fresh with what's going on in the response community. So thanks, Rick, for the Mitigation Journal podcast.
Well, thanks, Jamie, and thanks for you guys doing the EMS Garage podcast. I started listening to that recently and just, you know, sometimes just get laughing so hard with you guys. It's pretty funny. I appreciate that.
They do have a good time, don't they?
Yeah.
And it is the garage.
It is the garage. That's right.
And that's right.
Go ahead, Chris, about the garage, go ahead.
Sure. Hey, Rick, thanks. Wow, I feel honored that people listen. You know, sometimes I go, why do people listen? And I think it's just because we have fun, and sometimes people on there are drunk, so I don't really know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But anyway, Jamie, thanks for having me on, and you can find me Geeky Medic on pretty much anything, and I recently bought the domain Geeky Medic, so I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but come with us to San Francisco soon. And I will be there. I know that Ted will be there. I know a few other people will be there. I think even Miss P will be there with us as well. So
I'm working on it. It's like, it's my kids' swim championships weekend. Oh. And I'm like really, really agonizing over it. The thing is, I take them to practice every single day.
So, you got to go for that.
I know. So we're kind of like, you know, will I have a family when I get back? But yeah, definitely, right. Definitely looking forward to that, even if I can only be there virtually.
Right on. Well, I hope you can, and you can always find more about information about that there. We've got some interesting things coming up on our podcast too. I don't really know what it is yet. There's some kind of There's some kind of partnership in the works, but I have a feeling we're going to be at EMS today. I just have a sneaking suspicion. So if you have a chance to go to EMS today, the first week of March, join us there as well. We'll be, if nothing else, we'll be doing rogue podcasts from some undisclosed hotel room near the show, but we'll be there. So come join us. Thank you for having me on, Jamie. I love it. It's
great. And yeah, I'm hoping that we get a chance to catch up down at, we'll podcast from somewhere in Baltimore at EMS today. We'll have something to say as much as we can, and definitely going to, hopefully that comes together and we can see a lot of the listeners and put together some good fun stuff while we're down there too. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Last but not least, Greg Fries. You get to wind up here and tell us where can we find more of Greg Fries on the internet?
Well, I just want to go on record as to saying I have never podcasted under the influence on this show or the EMS Garage. So, Chris, as the host, I don't know if you should be thinking about some more stringent guidelines for your guests on the Garage.
Friends don't let friends podcast drunk.
You know, I think it should be a requirement to come on the show. I mean, have you heard when Skip's had maybe one or two? It's pretty funny.
That's true. That's true. Well, Jamie, thanks for having me. I think the best place these days where I'm blogging a lot is everydayemstips.com. Getting some nice momentum with that site and really getting some nice reader engagement in the comments and even some guest posts recently. So I thank people for visiting that site. And for some live online education training, go to emsbootcamp.com. We got some great sessions coming up, including one with you in February about pediatric assessment.
Yeah,
so thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. We're going to be doing that EMS bootcamp on pediatric assessment and treatment tips. And then I'm going to be following that up with the episode of the Medicast Live on the 9th of February. We're going to be doing a show here talking about just issues with pediatric patients. So, you know, they are a small portion of our population of patients, but yet we need to be prepared to treat them, and we need to be prepared to treat them well, whether we need to make sure we have the right equipment and the right skills, the right training, and there's a lot that goes into being ready for that pediatric call, both emotionally and with your skills and training. So we're going to be talking about that on the next Medicast Live here in February. That's always the second Tuesday of the month, except for the summer months. So you can always put that on your calendar. Second Tuesday of the month, 10 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be here with the Medicast Live at medicastlive.com. And it's been great having everybody in the chat room. I know Miss Paramedic was in the chat room checking in from time to time. We also had a lot of folks from the brand new Gen Med podcast. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the Gen Med podcast, you should definitely check out their show. Dr. A from the Dr. Anonymous podcast was here in the chat room. And so, you know, even if you can't you listen to the show live, you can check in on the chat room, listen live, and check the chat room chat out. It's always a lot of fun and a lot of good conversations going on there. So I want to thank everybody with that. Without too much further ado, I'm going to kind of close out the show here, and I will remind all of you that you need to keep a couple of things in mind. First off, don't forget I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. You can find more at medicast.com. But most importantly, for all of you, don't forget, scene safety.
Yes.
I was afraid to even try it this time after the debacle the last time we did it. But, BSI.